Blog Talk Radio.
January 31st, 2011, Washington, D.C., United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. Oh, yeah. Okay. Big news of the day. Obamacare struck down. Down by Florida, federal judge. Nobody could be happier than I am right now. Well, maybe some old grannies whose untimely demises would be imminent as a result of the implementation of Obamacare. A lot of grannies on the way out. They're happy. Medicare is probably going to be safe for now. Well, in a ruling against President Obama's health care law, federal judge Roger Vinson, V-I-N-S-O-N, used Mr. Obama's own position from the 2000 campaign against him, arguing that there are other ways to tackle health care short of requiring every American to purchase insurance. Wow. That's the first time that I can recall that Obama has talked out of both sides of his mouth and been called on it. The judge goes on to say, Jensen goes on to say, I note that in 2008, then Senator Obama supported a health care reform proposal that did not include an individual mandate because he was at that time strongly opposed to the idea, stating that if a mandate was the solution, we can try that to solve homelessness by mandating everybody buy a house. Judge Vinson wrote, in a footnote toward the end of the 78-page ruling Monday. Isn't that interesting? That's what Obama said. Obama said that if a mandate was the solution, we can try that to solve homelessness by mandating everybody buy a house. And that's exactly the point of those who have appealed Obamacare, because what President Obama seeks to do with this health care law is to force Americans to purchase something. Now, the argument goes as follows. Well,
the government can force you to buy car insurance.
Okay. Here's the thing. Here's where that argument falls severely flat. The government does not force one to buy a car. The government does not mandate that any American purchase an automobile, at least not yet. So if you don't buy a car, you have to have insurance. This would be the first time in the history of the United States of America where the government would force John Napolitano. I think that's funny. Do I sound like Janet Napolitano? Oh, my goodness, I need to check. Well, then that means I sound pretty manly. If I sound like Janet Napolitano, that means I sound pretty damn manly. All right. I have to change my voice one little bit. Okay. I'm using a different cue. Probably sound a little bit more than usual. That being said, that I sound like Janet, I don't know. All right, but nevertheless, Obama made a good point. But as usual, President Obama, is two-faced and stupid and mean compared to a coward and a punk and a chump. And he's not all that bright. Did he have any idea what sort of his own words would come back to haunt him? No, he did it. He did it, but it did. And the judge acknowledged that. Judge Vincent, a federal judge in the Northern District of Florida, struck down higher health law unconstitutional. Allowing the Obama administration to continue to implement and enforce it while the government appeals his ruling. The footnote was attached to the critical Judge Vincent's ruling. He said and the principal dispute, end quote, in the case was not whether Congress has power to tax care, but whether it has the power to compel the purchase of insurance. I hold that the government has no business compelling Americans to purchase anything at all. This is not the role of the federal government. And I think many of you would agree. Judge Vincent used Mr. Obama's campaign words from an interview with CNN to show that there are other options that could fall within the Constitution, including then-candidate Obama. The presidential campaign between Mr. Obama and his Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton was Mrs. Clinton's plan required all Americans to purchase insurance, and Mr. Obama's did not. In the heat of the primaries in 2008, New York Times columnist Paul Krugman, I can't stand that man, predicted Mr. Obama's opposition to an individual mandate could come back to haunt him. Quoting, if Mr. Obama gets to the White House and tries to achieve universal coverage, he'll find that it can't be done without mandates. But if he tries to institute mandates, the enemies of reform will use his own words against him. Enemies of reform. Reform. Sometimes reforms aren't all that good. I can cite Pol Pot, Ho Chi Minh, Joseph Stalin, Adolf Hitler. They attempted to institute, quote, reforms, in end quote, in their respective countries. I'm sure they had a few enemies of their special brands of reform. Mr. Obama has since defended the constitutionality of the individual mandate, arguing it's the linchpin of the program to bring in more customers, which is key to expanding the availability and affordability of insurance. I think what the key is doctors and nurses. Let's take Massachusetts, for example, where there is a slightly less stringent form of Obamacare already in effect. There are hours and hours of waiting room, emergency room wait time, far more than any other state averages. About 3 hours and 45 minutes more than the average New York City or Chicago emergency room wait. If a person wants to see a doctor, there is an average 3 month wait under the, quote, universal, end quote, health care system implemented in Massachusetts. That program was implemented by a Republican, Mitt Romney. We call him a rhino, Republican in name only. So you see, America, what you get with this universal health care is expanded coverage, far less services. You don't get that special care. And today, monitoring the news channels, I am getting the point that a lot of doctors will opt out of the Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare programs and go into private service, private doctoring, or concierge doctoring. Like on the show Royal Pains, one of my favorite shows, where a doctor is being paid cash for his services. Maybe, you know, bake him a pie, you know, or give him a chicken, you know, like in the old days. You know, bake him some fried chicken and put it in that little basket with the checkered napkin over the top of it, like Aunt Bee or like Granny from the Beverly Hillbillies. Old school. Yeah, exactly. Hank Med. It'll be exactly like that. A lot of doctors are saying that they will opt out. So if Obamacare survives, which I'm predicting it will not, once it reaches the Supreme Court, there'll be a 5-4 decision, and it'll be struck down, and they'll have to start all over, which would be great. But if for some reason one of those judges got up on the wrong side of the bed that morning, didn't get any nookie from his wife, or his special dude, or just didn't, eggs weren't right or something, and he decides that he's going to go ahead and vote with the opposition and vote that Obamacare is in fact constitutional, then, well, doctors are just going to start leaving. This is what I'm hearing all day long today, all morning long, all evening, watching Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck. I even tuned in to MSNBC to see what was going on over there. So if the doctors a lot of doctors leave, then there'll be a shortage of doctors, and that'll make things even worse. So now much of the 78-page ruling was a discussion of how the nation's founding fathers, such as, well, James Madison and Thomas Jefferson, set limits on congressional power. So Judge Vinson also hypothesized that under the Obama administration's legal theory, the government could mandate the eating of broccoli. The government could mandate that one buy a gym membership, and in fact, that one attend regular gym workouts. The government could mandate that a person buy and eat only egg whites because eating regular eggs could jeopardize their health and thus upset the system some way because you'll get sick. And they have to go to the hospital. And that will, in turn, start a chain reaction and you'll wind up getting sick. And once you get sick and there's not enough doctors to help you, you know, it just messes everything up. So what would occur is that the door would be open for the government to mandate that we do a whole lot of other things. And simply, that will not do. White House officials said that, sort of surprisingly curious reading, called into question Judge Vinson's entire ruling. We'll see. White House officials goes on to say there's something thoroughly odd and unconventional about the analysis. Indeed, odd and unconventional. Well, we can go right back to Barack Obama's own words. If a mandate was the solution, we could try that to solve homelessness by mandating everybody to buy a house. Well, okay, well then, if the judge's ruling is odd, then Obama's analogy was even worse. But somehow Obama's analysis made perfect sense to me for the first time since he's been in office. So it seems to me that Obama and Obamacare pretty much done. But we'll see. President Obama, President of the United States of America, goof that he is. Let me ask you something. Why were there always so many flies buzzing around Obama? I mean, for the last two summers, he's had more flies hanging around him than a dog in the summer, than a raunchy, funky dog. He's actually picked one of them out of the air flying around while he was in an interview. He's had two or three of them land on his face while he was giving a talk with the teleprompter. He's even had a rodent of some kind run right past him during a national address. He's got more rats and roaches and flies and bugs around him. I've never seen any such thing with any other public official, president, a Democrat or Republican. Perhaps the Antichrist tends to draw flies and rats and rodents and stuff. But he's lost the second of four court challenges to his health care law. I'm starting to think it's pretty much game over. But then again, I thought that once before. I thought that with the election of Scott Brown, again, from Massachusetts, that this whole health care debate was done. You know, the reason why this concerns me so much, because people will say to me, well, don't you want everybody to be covered? Don't you have compassion? Don't you want people to have proper coverage? Those less fortunate? Well, of course I do. And I go on to explain to folks that if you don't have health insurance and you go into an emergency room, you will be helped. You will not be turned away. And there are measures that are available for people who don't have insurance. Oh, yeah. And I'll say this. I had, a long time ago, I was working for a newspaper called New Times in South Florida. And I had a guy come in, and he needed a job. And he said, I need a job. I want to know if you have anything available. And I didn't have anything available at the time, but he said to me that, I have four kids, and, I really want to work because I need health insurance for them. And so I said, okay, well, I found something for him to do. And he was hired, and he was working so that he could get health insurance for his children. And I thought that was really great, and I've never forgotten that. He wasn't working to make a lot of money, to buy a lot of things. It was so that he would have health, and he was very honest about it. And I helped him out, and I thought that was really great. There are ways where people who don't have insurance can get insured or have services such that the government doesn't need to mandate health insurance, that we all buy health insurance. If the government mandates that we all buy health insurance, what happens for those people who simply cannot afford to buy it? And the Obama administration, as of today, has given out 243 waivers to unions and some of the largest corporations in America. So if they're getting waivers, these large corporations and these cash-rich unions, then who's going to take up that slack? Because they're not going to pay into this mandated universal system. They've gotten a waiver from Health and Human Services czar Kathleen Sebelius. So if they're getting all these waivers, then where's the money going to come from? Because Obama's issuing waivers left and right. I'm going to put in a call to get my own waiver, but I don't think I'll need it, because the Supreme Court is going to strike this down and we'll be done with the matter. But Judge Roger Vinson in Pensacola, in a 78-page opinion, struck the whole thing down, not just the provision for the individual mandate. Because in Virginia, the individual mandate was struck down and the rest was allowed to continue. In Florida, Judge Vinson struck the entire law down. Yes. So Florida sued on behalf of 13 states on March 23rd, the day Obama signed into law the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. That's what it's called. We know it as Obamacare. It's intended to provide the U.S. with almost universal health care coverage. Seven states joined the suit last year, and six this year. Virginia sued separately on March 23rd, and Oklahoma filed its own suit on this January 21st. Now, bear in mind that all over the world where universal health care has been implemented, it has never worked as advertised. In fact, the UK, who is the blueprint for Obamacare, well, they're dismantling their universal health care service because it doesn't work. Interestingly, I've done some research and I've discovered that most of the countries that provide, quote, universal, end quote, services, end quote, those very folks are the ones who fly here at great expense to the United States and pay cash for services. Those folks who have universal health care in Canada, just across the border from New York and Detroit, those folks come here for their health care. So if universal health care is so great in these other places, why do folks come here for their health care and in most cases pay cash? Now, regardless of how laudable Obamacare attempts may have been, Congress must operate within the bounds established by the Constitution. This case is not about whether the act is wise or unwise. It's about the constitutional role of the federal government. And that's the bottom line here. Now, the ruling by Vinson, who was named to the federal bench in 1983 by President Ronald Reagan, God bless you. God bless you, Ronnie. Wherever you are, God bless you, man. I'm getting a tingle up my leg thinking about Ronald Reagan. Well, the ruling will be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, the U.S. Court of Appeals in Atlanta. An appeals court in Richmond, Virginia is already slated in May to hear the challenges to two conflicting lower court rulings in that state, one upholding the legislation, the other invalidating part of it. Boy, I tell you what, we do indeed live in interesting times, because what I'm seeing here is a cliffhanger, because you've basically got, you have four judges. This is going to be a 5-4 split. And that means that it's going to go down to the wire. Now, I want to talk one more about trash collectors.
Jack Napolitano, that dude wants everybody in America to turn into snitches. He wants us all to become snitches while we're sniffing on each other.
He didn't get a lot of press back in December. Waste management workers are out and about when almost everyone else is not. Except someone who might be up to no good. A former FBI agent recently trained all waste management drivers, helpers, and technicians in Rensselaer and Albany counties
to act as a mobile community watch. Snitches. They're snitches. They're snitching. They're on these routes every day, so they're used to the normal situation. So they are able to recognize a non-normal situation. Well, a brain twister right there. Explains Ken Beavis. That says a lot right there, Beavis. Ken Beavis of Waste Management. Trucks are now armed with a cell phone. Trucks are armed with a cell phone camera. A cell phone camera and incident reports. So they'll have accurate information for police and possible prosecutors. Oh my God. The garbage man is a snitch. Be careful. He might be a peeping Tom too. He got a camera. He got a phone. So if your wife or your girlfriend's up early in the morning taking a shower, the waste management guy might be peeping in the window, watching you take a shower. Or, as I'm prone to do, go out in my underwear in the backyard. Sometimes I'll go out into the backyard buck naked. I got a pretty high fence. Nobody can really see me. I got a lot of trees around. The waste management guy might be lurking in the bushes. The garbage man taking my picture or maybe even a video. He goes on to say, Beavis goes on to say, the drivers understand their main job is to observe and report and let authorities do their jobs. That's what Beavis said. So I thought that the driver's main job was to collect the trash and put the trash in their trucks and then put your trash receptacle thing down and dry and go away. But here, Beavis says that the drivers understand their main job is to observe and report and let authorities do their job. Do you mean buck naked in the yard? Okay, the extra set of eyes and ears in the street is appreciated because even cops know they can't be everywhere all the time. So the cops are now relying on Beavis and the garbage man to tail. He goes on to say, the old adage is, where's a cop when you need one? Is that the old adage? Now it will be, where's a cop or DGS or waste management when you need one, said Albany Police Chief Steve Karkoff, K-R-O-K-O-F-F, Karkoff. Okay, so the police chief in Albany, I'm not sure if it's Albany. Is that Albany, New York, or Albany, Georgia? It's New York. Okay. And it's called Waste Watch. Waste Watch. So the garbage man could be watching you. Think about that for a minute. Now, someone who listens to my show wanted me to go over once again my thesis on the smartest person in the room. Because I did write a thesis not so long ago when I was in grad school, when someone classified me as the smartest person in the room. And I went on to explain that unless I'm in the room by myself, it's impossible to be the smartest person in the room. You may
This is CR Jones 3-2B is asking me if I'm kidding. If I'm kidding about the garbage man being the watch, being the peeping Toms, or me being the smartest person in the room. Which one? Anyway, so I went on to state that it is impossible for anyone to be the smartest person in the room unless they're in the room by themselves. And here's how the thesis went. And I'm going to substitute me for Obama. Since Obama first stepped on the national stage, well, this is not what I'm about to say. Is not part of the original thesis. You'll probably get when it is. Since Obama first stepped on the national stage, pundits have fallen all over each other in the race to declare that Obama is special type of genius. For example, Tom Shales of the Washington Post recently called Obama the smartest kid in the class. And then billionaire Julian Robertson claimed, Obama, from all I read, thinks that on every occasion that he is the smartest person in the room. And I think he often probably is. Can you say this dude is kissing Obama's ass? Robertson may be half right. Obama apparently does consider himself the smartest person in every room. According to Peter Baker of the New York Times, one prominent Democrat lawmaker told me Obama's problem is that he's not insecure. Oh, no, because he's Superman. He's a deity. He is a savior. He's the anointed one. He's actually Jesus Christ come back. He always believes he's the smartest person in any room and never feels the sense of panic. I don't understand that at all. Now, how do Shales, Robinson, and even Obama know that the president is the smartest kid in the class or the smartest guy in the room? That's my question. There is an interesting and little discussed quandary in logic, and it's called an aporia. In the assertion that person X, whomever that might be, is the smartest person in the room, and here's where my thesis takes hold. Now, before we examine this problem, let's set down some parameters. What do these people mean by, quote, smartest, end quote? Since the discussion is about politics, it is fairly safe to assume that smartest does not refer to some standard test for intelligence. Thinking it through, Obama's admirers cannot be referring to his IQ. In terms of IQ, Obama is clearly not the smartest person in any room he enters. The fact of the matter is that Obama's IQ scores have not been made public. Guesses by enthusiasts of his IQ ranging from 140 to 170, I would say no. Obama's detractors calculate a much lower IQ, and I am one of Obama's detractors. Thank you very much. Even conceding the highest score of 170, Obama will not always be the smartest person in any room. He would rarely be the smartest person at a local Mensa convention and never be the smartest person at a meeting of the ISPE. Perhaps smartest denotes having the greatest overall knowledge, i.e. real world smart. Is Obama the most knowledgeable person in any room? Well, this too seems unlikely. Imagine a party attended by a physicist, me, a historian,
a neuroscientist and an English professor, and then the idiot President Obama. Let's assume that we all have roughly the same IQ. The smartest person in the room in terms of knowledge will depend on what topics are discussed. If the subjects are plasma energy, thiocyanidines, synapse firings, and the proper use of regenerant, Obama will not be the smartest man in the room. Keep in mind that prior to becoming a politician, Obama's claim to real-world intellectual status was as an instructor, not a professor of constitutional law. There's a difference between being an instructor and a professor of constitutional on any level in the college atmosphere. For example, when I was a PhD student, I served on occasion as an instructor, which means that when my professor was out getting coffee or diddling one of my classmates or just out making an ass of himself somewhere, I served as the substitute teacher or instructor while the professor was off doing something else. And that's all Obama was. But, you know, folks are saying that he was a professor of constitutional law at the University of Chicago and blah, 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 blah. But that was all false. Just more false advertising. Nevertheless, let's move on. There's another definition. There's another possible definition of smartest. Obama could have the most street smarts. This kind of intelligence would entail being the most cunning and devious person in any room. Now we're getting somewhere. Let's call this the Machiavellian smart. Here, Obama may take the prize and run off with it. As we will see, no one except Obama would know and be able to truthfully assert that Obama is the Machiavellian smartest person in the room, because that would spoil the scam. As Machiavelli said, it is double pleasure to deceive the deceiver. That's an actual quote, a Machiavellian quote. I didn't put the quotes in there, but that's a quote. Of course, this double deceiver must not be caught in the act of deception. If by smartest, Shales and Robertson and everyone else except Obama, who makes such a claim, mean that Obama is the Machiavellian smartest, they would be willing to, they'd be willing dupes to Obama's hustle. Machiavelli described such associations this way, and I quote, "One who deceives will always find those who allow themselves to be deceived," end quote. Check that out. Now, I'm not implying that Shales and Robertson have been bamboozled. They have, by the way. They are clearly gushing in their praise of Obama's, quote, smarts, end quote. Whatever those might be. But what I am asserting is that they do not and cannot know what they're talking about when they claim that Obama is the smartest person in the room. a claim by Y that X is the smartest person in the room depends on how smartest is defined and whether or not Y is in the room with X. Now, consider once again a room containing a physicist, a historian, a neuroscientist, and an English professor. Y agrees to tell us who is the smartest person in the room. In this example, smartest means highest overall knowledge. Now, if Y is smart enough to accurately establish which of the four people in the room has the best grasp of a variety of topics, Y must have an even better understanding of those subjects than the person in the room. Inside the room, after his interviews are completed, if Y is honest and capable of making the determination, Y will say, "I am the smartest person in the room." If Y conducts the survey outside the room, say through a conference call, then Y can truthfully and objectively report which of the four people is the smartest person in the room. In either event, Y must be smarter than all of the people in the room to inform us the name of the smartest person therein. And damn. A room full of outstanding con artists or politicians presents Y with an entirely different scenario. Machiavellian, because an adjective defined as cunning, scheming, and unscrupulous, especially in politics or in advancing one's career, for a reason, moral person Y will be hard-pressed to detect the greatest Machiavellian double deceiver in the room filled with them. Are you following a brother? Note that it will be impossible for those of us outside of the room to determine whether or not Y is part of some greater deception if Y identifies X as the smartest person in the room, where smartest means most devious. Now, if Y is smart enough to detect the smartest con artist, it is highly likely that Y is either the biggest of the swindlers, lying sack of you know what, or that Y is covering for the greatest con man in the room. Now, if you got all that, well, let's move on. I gave you a minute to just digest that. Y is covering for the greatest con man in the room. In either event, in this scenario, if Y claims that X is the Machiavellian smartest person in the room, there are reasons to doubt Y's conclusion. Can you dig it?
Can you dig it?
Getting back to the quote from that moron from the New York Times, who is obviously not the smartest person in any room. Notice that the unnamed Democrat source said that Obama always believes he is the smartest person in any room. Now, there's something creepy about this claim, if it's true. And check this out. Everyone reading my thesis has been, at one time or another, the smartest person in a room. We knew it at the time, But what kind of narcissism and or Machiavellian cunning must reside in the heart of a person who always believes he's the smartest person in any room? A friend of Socrates named Chaperon asked the oracle at Delphi if anyone was wiser than Socrates. The priestess for the oracle replied, there was no one. Socrates did not relish the proclamation that he was, in effect, the smartest person in any room. In fact, Socrates himself challenged the pronouncement. He went on to quote, and I quote Socrates, it seemed to me that people with the greatest reputations for wisdom were almost entirely deficient, while others who were supposed to be their inferiors were much better qualified in practical intelligence. End quote of Mr. Socrates. This is called humility, of which I have none, by the way. The smartest person in one room fully understands that he may not be the smartest person in the next. That a large part of what it takes to be the smartest person in the room, that is a large part of what it takes to be the smartest person in the room. And all of that came from someone who said at one time or another that I, Dr. C. Robert Jones, was the smartest person in the room. Indeed, in that group of morons that I was with, no doubt I probably was, but I'm certainly and certainly never have been the smartest person in any room, in every room. It's impossible. So I say to these folks, please, stop kissing this man's ass. It is embarrassing. For God's sake. I have never seen such worship of a man who puts on his pants the same way everyone else does. I mean, just worship for a man, and just a man. He is not a god. And now, all the butt kissing in the world, all the bowing and all the scraping that Obama has done across the globe in the last 2 years has served to no end. Nothing good has come of it. He's laughed at. He's labeled a fool, a neophyte. He's labeled soft and a candy ass. He's not respected in Egypt, in the Middle East, anywhere. George Bush was both feared and respected in the Middle East and other places. Not every place, of course not. Obama's not feared or respected by any other nation. Indeed, Ozone, he won the Nobel Peace Prize from a group of liberals who give out that prize. He won the Peace Prize for doing absolutely nothing. Ozone just wrote that Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize 6 months into office as the President of the United States. He won the Nobel Peace Prize. And I'm glad that you make that point, because he did nothing to earn it, which invalidates the prize itself. We were fighting a war on two fronts. In Iraq at the time, it was still in pretty good swing, and in Afghanistan, we were using Predator drones to blow unsuspecting Taliban to kingdom come. Obama signed off on the use of Predator drones. Marines, Navy, airmen, hell, even the Coast Guard doing battle in Afghanistan and Iraq. But yet, Obama wins the Nobel Peace Prize. Did he call for nonviolence at any time? Did he come into office and bring the troops home? He could have ordered a pullout of Afghanistan and Iraq. First day in office, a gradual pullout. He did not. Instead, he focused on the bust of Winston Churchill, said, get that out of here. And then sent over some DVDs to England that couldn't even play in the DVD players over there. He didn't even, protocol folks didn't even bother to figure that one out. So, yeah, Obama is an idiot who, for some reason, has people kissing his butt like he's a lap dog. I mean, like they're his lap dogs. Tomorrow we're going to talk about end of days. Tomorrow we're going to talk about the Antichrist again. Tomorrow we're going to talk about what's happening in the Middle East and how it reflects and focuses and how it speaks to the events in the Middle East right now, speak to revelations and how Obama plays a significant role in the end of this world as we know it, as it pertains to revelations. And then we're going to tie it all together. Politics, biblical prophecy, all of it. The Middle East, what's going on in Egypt right now, what's going on in Cyprus, what's going on all over the Middle East, and how it speaks to Bible prophecy and how Obama plays an integral part in that. It's almost as if Obama's presidency has triggered the start of Bible prophecy, which will usher in the end of this world as we know it. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. No, no, no. It sounds that way, doesn't it? But I am a scholar of Revelations, the book. I have done extensive reading and research. We'll talk about it tomorrow. And we'll talk about all the other things that are going on this week. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great night and a great day tomorrow. And I'll look for you tomorrow right around this time. Thank you so much for listening. Good night.